the church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century.
O come, O come, Emmanuel.
The 16th century.
Lord, keep us steadfast in your word. Help us to fight this evil.
The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Those Republican voters who say they're uncomfortable with Romney's Mormonism are just as likely to say they're going to vote for him as those Republicans who say they have no misgivings about Romney's religion.
The possibility of straddling or being in the middle or compromising, those possibilities are all being taken off the table. And they're being taken off the table by the radical gay agenda.
I think that's one of the fundamental mistakes that you see in a lot of Christianity today, is Christianity becomes kind of a 12-step, a 20-step program of rehabilitation.
Western New York State independent Baptist pastors love issues, etc.
It is among a parent's worst nightmares, something you dread, something you never want your child to go through. When your child is ill, it's bad enough when they're just sick in an everyday sense, but when they grow critically ill, life-threateningly ill, and a parent hopes and prays every day that such a thing would never happen, but what about when it does? What about when the entire family suffers because of the illness of a child, and your life must change permanently because of that illness? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in on this Tuesday afternoon, the 7th of August. We're going to be talking about the story of a family suffering with a child's illness. Emily Cook joins us, author of the new book, Weak and Loved, a mother-daughter love story. And then, a little bit later, audio open lines. Missouri has a so-called prayer amendment, Amendment 2, that would amend the Constitution to allow prayer just about anywhere and every place as long as it's private and not disruptive. And it would allow students to be able to pray, but also to be able to express religious views without fear of discrimination. Some people say it's just unnecessary in Missouri. What about you? Audio open lines, I want your answer to that question. 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-6943. Leave your answer to the question at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc, or send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org. Emily Cook is a married mother of six children and a wife of a Lutheran pastor in Columbus, Indiana, and she's authored the new book, Weak and Loved, a mother-daughter love story. Emily, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you, Todd. It's wonderful to be here.
First of all, how is your daughter, Aggie?
She is doing wonderful. She started second grade just yesterday, and she has been seizure-free and tumor-free for 3 years now. So she is restored fully to health.
So tell me how all of this started, the story of her epilepsy, the tumor, the eventual surgery that we celebrate has apparently up to this point seemed to have solved the problem.
Yes. We moved to our first church here in Indiana in 2008. At the time, we had four children and found out we were expecting our fifth. And then a month later, Aggie began having seizures out of nowhere. She was a healthy four-year-old up until right after her fourth birthday. Started out very short little. Like, we almost thought she was daydreaming, but as time went on and things progressed, they turned into longer, more involved seizures, and we had to seek medical care for her.
So what was it like at first? How did you first react when it dawned on you that this was seizures and not simply daydreaming or some other kind of phenomenon of childhood?
Right. It was really a shock because, like I said, the early seizures were very short, and she's a very active kid, and it almost seemed like, she'd be running along playing and just kind of have to pause for a second. And we thought, well, maybe she just goes so fast she does have to kind of regroup for a minute. But she ended up having an EEG at first, and it showed some seizure activity. And by the time all of that was scheduled, we could see, and we had done some of our research, we could see that epilepsy was more and more likely. I had always pictured seizures being, you know, the typical what you picture, falling on the floor and convulsing and that sort of thing. She did end up having a few of those types of seizures as things progressed. But when it started out, it was just a few little daydreams, almost quirks. And we weren't even sure if we would need medicine or treatment for her.
So what was your reaction when the diagnosis was finally issued that this was epilepsy and at the time cause unknown?
At first, my thought was, oh, good, finally someone believes me something is wrong here. because, like I said, they were so mild that I thought that many people thought maybe it was just something small and crazy that she would grow out of. But as I was with her every day and could see the subtle little changes, I was ready to have a name for it. And at the time, I knew so little about epilepsy that I thought, okay, good, we have the diagnosis, now we'll get the medicine, and things will be back to normal. It was not anywhere near that simple, come to find out. She had been through at least 5 different medications by the time we ended up at Cleveland Clinic, and none of them stopped or really even slowed the seizures in her case.
How often per day, I know this is not something that could be predicted like a clock, but
right.
How often per day was she having seizures?
I would say every hour or two that she was awake. And then as they progressed and they would get longer and a little more severe, she ended up having to sleep a lot more often during the day as well. So she would be awake maybe 11 hours during the day by the time we went to Cleveland Clinic, and you could expect her to have one every hour or two throughout the day.
Emily, these seizures, as often as they were, as you just mentioned here, really required not only you as a mother, but your entire family to kind of restructure the whole family's life, didn't it?
Oh, definitely. You know, I'm a very busy, task-oriented kind of person, and when we moved to our first church, my plan was to be involved, you know, with the church and serving and helping alongside my husband and in all kinds of ways in the church. And we ended up basically switching over to survival mode. The needs inside my own house as a mom were way more than I could bear in themselves. So there was no starting new groups and new programs and, you know, serving the people, for me anyways, as Aggie was sick. We had to plan our days around seizures. I mean, if we were to go to the park, I was putting on my running shoes and kind of hovering around Aggie, hoping to catch her if I needed to, or we just would skip a lot of social events and things like that because the stress level was just so much. So, yes, it switched our whole lives from being kind of the people active in ministry to the people who had to kind of step back and receive and just survive for a while.
Two questions on that. How did Aggie react to all this as young as she was?
You know, for the first part of it, she really didn't seem to know what was going on. The seizures left no trace in her memory. And so I remember one day after she had had a seizure, and she, after her seizure, often just needed to be hugged and rest a little bit. And I was sitting with her, and I said, Jesus, please help Aggie. And she said, Mommy, why did you say that? I mean, it had been months, and she really had no idea what we were, you know, worrying about and thinking about on her behalf. She just was going along being a kid, and every now and then would get interrupted by this mysterious thing, but she didn't really seem to know. Now, her older sister definitely knew more about what was going on. Lorraine was 6 at the time, and her role, you know, they were best little buddies, but even at age 6, I saw Lorraine begin to watch Aggie, and there were many times when she would catch her right before she hit the ground and protect her from injury or alert me when there was a seizure, you know, run for Kleenex when someone was bleeding and that sort of thing. And, I mean, it broke my heart to see a little girl at age 6 having to learn those things, but it also was amazing to see how God helped Big Sister deal with this, too.
There's a point in your book, right about halfway through, where mm-hmm. you recount your husband, Josh, trying to get you to come to grips with the issue of the old Aggie and the Aggie since the epilepsy. Talk about that, if you would.
It was hard for me to accept that Aggie was changing. One of the things that seizures did for her was require that she rest a lot and that she remove herself from social situations. And in my head and in my heart, I was thinking, this is just not her. We need to help her through this and fix it and move past it. And, you know, he, and along with my mother-in-law, talked with me about, look, this is who Aggie is right now. You know, she may not be the way she was before seizures and a year ago, but I started to learn with their help that my job wasn't to necessarily hold on to that old Aggie that I remembered and kind of force her back into that, but hold on to hope for that while at the same time loving whatever Aggie happened to be around me that day. If she was exhausted Aggie or kind of, you know, out of it Aggie or hyper Aggie or whatever Aggie happened to show up that day, it was that one that I was supposed to love and serve.
You are very honest about your own weakness in the course of all this, mm-hmm. when you tell this story. Why is it so important for you to tell that story about your own personal weakness and struggling with your daughter's epilepsy?
What I learned while Aggie was sick was that it was not my strength that was going to get us through this. It was not me keeping it together as much as I would have liked to, me solving all the problems or going through the trial with a smile on my face and doing everything right. It was God's faithfulness. And that faithfulness was there and it was solid whether I was handling it well or not. And I saw Aggie as she, you know, she got sicker and the seizures were starting to take some of her cognitive abilities away. She became, well, she always was, but she was a picture for me of what it was to be a child of God. A suffering child of God. She became an expert at receiving love. I saw her just soak up whatever was given to her, whether it was family members or God's blessing, His word, His, you know, people's prayers for her. She just accepted it humbly. She didn't hide her weaknesses and her suffering. It didn't occur to her. She just was who she was, and she received and she accepted. And I saw that that was okay. I mean, she may not be, at that time, she wasn't producing anything for God. She wasn't productive, and we didn't know if she ever would be, but He loved her anyways, and that was the beauty of it. His grace and His love was solid, whether she was doing anything or whether I was doing anything.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more with Emily Cook. Story of a family suffering with a child's illness, author of the book Weak and Loved, Mother's Daughter Love Story. Stay tuned.
Does your church need a full-time or backup organist? The Virtual Organist Service from Church Music Solutions is genuine organ leadership using your instrument with your specific selections when you need it. You can try it out for free with our demo unit, which allows you and your members to hear and see the virtual organist without obligation and without a sales pitch. For more details, go to churchmusicsolutions.com.
Over summer, 2.5 months of what a child learned in school can leak away. Call Sylvan to turn summer learning loss into a gain. Sylvan pinpoints exactly what skills your child needs in just 3 hours a week over 12 weeks. You'll see results in your child's math or reading performance improving one grade level guaranteed. Demonstrated through the pre and post assessment. So call now. At participating locations only, some restrictions may apply. Call for complete guarantee details.
Sylvan Learning Center of Creve Coeur, 314-997-3035. 997-3035.
Where doctrine is life. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Holy Cross Evangelical Lutheran Church, Albany, Oregon, is a mid-Willamette Valley LCMS congregation where the liturgy lives and God's people worship as one, with sound biblical doctrine, weekly communion, and a clear confession of Christ crucified for the sin of the world. Please join us at 2515 Queen Avenue Southeast, or visit our website at www.HolyCrossLutheranAlbany.org.
This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Thrivent Financial has a new charitable grant program called Thrivent Choice. Thrivent Choice allows you to designate charitable outreach funds to Lutheran Public Radio. For more information, look for the Thrivent logo under the Donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. or ask your Thrivent representative about Thrivent Choice. Help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. with Thrivent Choice.
Perhaps one of the most beloved children's hymns in the life of the church. It's not only for children. It's playing right now at Lutheran Public Radio. You know, one of the things that makes Lutheran Public Radio unique is not only that it's sacred music for the world, but it's about 80% choral music, as you're hearing right there. LutheranPublicRadio.org, sacred music for the world, LutheranPublicRadio.org. We're talking about the story of a family suffering with a child's illness. Emily Cook is our guest. She's a Mary mother of six and a wife of a Lutheran pastor. Her new book, Weak and Loved, A Mother-Daughter Love Story. Emily, tell us about coming to the Cleveland Clinic Epilepsy Center.
Well, that was overwhelming, but when she was first diagnosed, brain surgery was the most terrifying thing I ever could have imagined. By the time we were heading to Cleveland, I was hoping so much that she would be a candidate because the epilepsy had gotten so bad. Cleveland Clinic is like a small city. It's just armies of medical people everywhere, and I was ready for that. I wanted a whole group of people to look at her and put their heads together and fix it. And when we went there, the doctors and the nurses that we met were very attentive, and they were interested in all those details that I had been collecting and journaling over the past few months, and they immediately gave us hope for her. Now, her case was definitely not a black and white case, but they were committed and working together to care for her, and that was a wonderful experience, though a very scary one.
And it was there, I believe, that you finally heard one of the specialists say that there was a possible solution in the surgery. What was the nature of her surgery?
She had a spot, they called it at first, that showed up on her MRI from the very beginning. Now, what was unusual with Aggie is that normally someone who has brain surgery has to have a seizure focus, so they could track on an EEG that all the seizures were coming from a certain spot in the brain. Now, with Aggie, she had that spot, which they said may or may not be related to the epilepsy from the beginning, but her seizures were coming from everywhere. So we're expecting them to say, because of that, she's not a candidate for surgery and we'll have to try more medicines or a special diet or something like that. Well, her doctor in Cleveland decided to take a different approach. She said, even though the spot doesn't seem like the focus, why don't we start with removing it and see what happens, basically. It still may somehow be an underlying cause, even though it's not an obvious one. So the tumor was in her right parietal lobe, and that is what they removed.
And what happened after that?
After that, she spent 3 days in the hospital recovering, and she has not had a single seizure since that day. They discharged her 3 days later and said she can go on the playground, she can do whatever, just don't let her swim for 6 weeks.
Wow.
And she's been doing that and more ever since.
Now, I got to ask you, because I've been through, you know, and I think every parent has, if they've had a kid that's suffered with any kind of serious problem or illness. And I know what it was like for me. You live, after the storm has passed, 4 years with your fingers crossed. And with sleeping with one eye open. You do.
Yeah.
And it's you can't shake it, no matter how hard you pray.
Right.
It's difficult to shake it. Talk about that.
Definitely. Well, and her type of tumor was a grade 2 tumor, so the doctors won't even let us shake it if we want to. Aggie requires frequent MRIs still, and they will not call her cured for 10 years post-surgery. It's been 3 years, so it's looking good, but you know, we really don't know what to expect. And like you said, you can't shake that feeling. I do still look at her head and wonder, or when she's on the monkey bars, I hold my breath and pray another prayer, you know, that that's not the time when the seizures come back. But it is exactly when you learn that your children are fragile, they're not yours, and you really don't have that control, that you would like to have over them to keep them healthy and safe forever, but that they may, in fact, they will suffer in this life. And guess what? If your baby suffers, you're going to suffer right along with them. So I do still hold my breath and I fear. However, having been through it once with Aggie and knowing that God is faithful, you know, if I look in myself and I say, could I handle it again? And the answer is absolutely no. But learning that God is not an idea, but a person, and he who helped me and Aggie in the past will help us again in the future, that's the only way that I can have any sort of peace thinking ahead.
What did God's word teach you in the midst of all this about yourself?
Again, reminding me what I already knew, that I am definitely a sinner, but also that he is a God that welcomes and loves sinners. There were many times when I was trying to sort out stuff in my heart and in my head before coming to God in prayer, when his word or one of his people would gently remind me that, look, it's not about you sorting it out. It's about coming to God as you are and trusting in Christ's forgiveness for you and being weak and loved, being honest about your weakness and your sin and allowing his righteousness and his faithfulness to cover you.
Talk about what it meant to be able to go to church on Sunday morning through the midst of all this.
Well, there were times when I didn't even want to go. My husband being the pastor, and I had, I was expecting one child and had four to get ready, and one might be seizing, and the other two were toddlers. I mean, it was exhausting to get ourselves around in church. And then dealing with the emotional angle of Aggie's sickness, and, you know, I really wanted to be the one that could keep it together and smile and, you know, be fine on Sunday morning. And when it got to the point where I couldn't be fine on Sunday morning, it was a struggle to get there. But going to church and standing with my peers, my other sinners, other believers, who we all came together and we confessed our need. I'm sinful and unclean. I need grace. I need Christ. I need forgiveness. Realizing that it wasn't about me having it together. It was about God's faithfulness. And Sunday morning, the service of the Word is where you come to receive what you need for that week, for that moment, for that day. It was grace to do that and to be able to do that even during the hardest times.
Talk briefly, if you would, about the best advice that you would give to someone who is trying to help someone like you were, standing by, watching it go on. What's the best advice that you could give to people close to those who are suffering, especially in the time of a child's illness?
I would say continue to tell them what they already know, but just the basics, the basic truths of our faith, that God is faithful to sinners, that he is faithful even when it doesn't feel like he's faithful, when we're suffering, that he is constantly there to help and to save us, and that we have such treasures in his word and sacraments and in the church body and other people. So I would always encourage someone who is suffering or helping someone else who is suffering to remember to rely on God, who gives us what we need for ourselves and to share and comfort with others through word and sacrament.
Two quick final questions. You say that people will say, be strong in the midst of something like this. I say, be weak and be loved. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think I wasted a lot of time trying to pretend that I was stronger than I was, that I could handle things that I really wasn't handling or couldn't handle. And it was such a comfort to realize that I'm not the glue that holds my family even or this whole world together, that though I am a sinner and I do get exhausted and depressed, that that I can be that way and admit that to the people around me and receive God's grace and his faithfulness through those people. Receiving the love of Christ through the people around me became essential for me during Aggie's sickness.
with only about 30 seconds, have you thought about the day sometime here in the future when Aggie's going to read her own story, your book?
I have. I have read parts of it to her, actually, and her older sister enjoys hearing about it a little bit. Aggie gets a little uncomfortable, only because I really don't think she remembers. She has no idea how bad it was. She does remember the green popsicles at Cleveland Clinic and the Ronald McDonald visit and the garden where we played. She has a very rosy memory of the whole situation, so it will be interesting to see as she grows how she deals with the more difficult things. But I do hope that it's a reminder, as it is for me, I hope it's a reminder to her and the rest of my family of God's faithfulness in difficult times.
Just a few seconds here. What do you pray every night as a mother having gone through this?
Well, I pray that prayer that I prayed before Aggie went into surgery, I know she's yours, Lord, but please don't take her. That was what went around in my head constantly as she was being operated on. I know she's yours, Lord, but please don't take her. I still pray that, and I know that there's a lot of selfishness bound up with that prayer. But I also pray, Lord, help me to love them. Grow me up in love for them as you grow them up, knowing that, you know, surgery and summer camp and first days of school, all those things I see now as practice for letting the children go, for letting them go either into adulthood or letting them go home to be with Christ, whichever comes first. And not that I have any of this down, but knowing that it's practice and knowing that in each thing I'm going to need God's help for it, I do pray that he helps me to always keep that in mind, even as I have them all in my home right now.
Emily Cook is the married mother of six children and a wife of a Lutheran pastor in Columbus, Indiana. She's author of the new book, Weak and Loved, A Mother-Daughter Love Story. You can find out more about this tremendous book at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Thanks, Emily.
Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with you answering a question. You answer the question, I'll ask it if you don't mind. Here in Missouri, well, here in the Midwest, Missouri being a state that is often considered a bellwether for things like this politically, they have a proposed Missouri Constitution amendment being voted on today, and it would amend the Constitution, the fifth article of the Constitution, to secure religious freedom in a way more explicit than previously secured in the Constitution. If you're a Missouri voter, did you vote for it or against it? If so, or if not, why? And do you think it's necessary? We'll hear more about it on the other side of the break. Audio open lines, issues, etc. right after this. What are the sources and origins of writings like the Book of Mormon, the Quran, and the Gospel of Thomas? And how do they compare to the Bible? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August is One Word, Many Writings, A Study of the Origins of Religious Writings. You can read an excerpt at issuesetc.org, or you can find out more about One Word, Many Writings by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. One Word, Many Writings by Dr. Adam Francisco.
At SteadfastLutherans.org, we've been called contentious. We've even been called the brothers of John the curmudgeon, and we may well be curmudgeonly sometimes. But we always have the best and clearest voices in confessional Lutheranism. Articles from Molly Hemingway, Martin Nolan, Clement Preuss, Todd Wilkin, and a host of regular contributors. Come check out the new Lutheran media. Always clear, always concise, always confessionally Lutheran. SteadfastLutherans.org.
Theology for blue collar, white collar, and clerical collar. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Holy Trinity Lutheran, Garfield, New Jersey. Grace Lutheran, Naples, Florida. St. John's Lutheran, Chicago, Illinois. St. Paul Lutheran, Unionville, Michigan. Mount Calvary Lutheran, Beverly Hills, California. Epiphany Lutheran, Door, Michigan. The Good Shepherd Lutheran, Inglewood, California. St. John's Lutheran, Sayville, New York. Apostles Lutheran, Melrose Park, Illinois. Christ Our Savior Lutheran, Elizabeth, Colorado. Colorado, Grace Lutheran, Strasburg, Illinois, and Bethel Lutheran, Thunder Bay, Ontario, Canada. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal, the Issues Etc. 300.